Good morning. My name is Sarah Miller. I'm currently a senior at McLean School of Maryland, and next year I will be attending St. John's College in Annapolis. Go Johnnies! When you think of John chapter 14, most point to the sixth verse, "I am the way, the truth, and the life." The key verse for me is at the beginning, "Do not let your hearts be troubled, for in my house there are many rooms." By this, Jesus meant that every Christian who believes in him has a place prepared especially for him or her. It is about belonging with our Creator. Now, I had always been the odd kid in middle school. For some reason, I could never fit into a group. I wasn't a jock or a cheerleader, a prep, or the class clown. At the same time, I wasn't a nerd or a gamer or a goth or a rebellious kid with spiked hair. Nothing fit who I was. I was just kind of there. This created some interesting results. Because I was alone, there were few expectations from others about my place among the students. Yet I desperately tried to fit in with the crowds. I wanted friends who I could relate with and confide in, but there were none. I wanted to belong in a group, yet I found none. And out of this loneliness, with holy patience and care, came God. I gave my life to Christ in the summer of my sixth grade year. And 2 years later, I started to dig into the scriptures. The more I read and prayed, the more I began to trust God. I had no one to turn to at school, so I turned to him. In my darkest and loneliest hours, he was the one I could go to for peace and acceptance. And slowly but surely, my whole life changed. Trying to fit in with the world was no longer important. Being a Christian and a child of God became my identity. Nothing that the world said mattered to me anymore. What mattered was God and his plan. Many verses have helped me in life. There is one that has aided me every day. Jeremiah 29:11. "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans to prosper you and not to harm you. Plans to give you hope and a future." It is hard to give God control when you want to be the coolest or most popular girl in school. But the only way to live in peace is to do just that. And once that happens, anything is possible. I want to leave you with this. What is God's plan in your life? And have you chosen to follow his plan or yours?
Hi, I'm Bill Reed. I'm a senior at St. Anselm's Abbey School in Northeast D.C., and I'll be attending the College of Worcester in Ohio next fall. Since my brother already used all the funny jokes in his senior testimony 3 years ago, I'm just going to move into mine. The National Presbyterian Church family has been the only common component in my life since I can remember, whether I liked it or not. Obsessions came and went. I changed schools, friends, and hobbies, but the church family was always there, reinforcing my faith. For my testimony, I chose to share a few experiences where my faith has been shaken. Each time, someone from our church family was there for me. When I was 10 years old, my grandfather, who I referred to as Grandpa Dookie, died from prostate cancer. I was crushed and confused, asking the seemingly cliched questions of why Grandpa Dookie and what kind of God would do this. My faith was bent to the point of breaking. When my family attended Grandpa Dookie's funeral, I broke down as we arrived at the ceremony to bury him. Thankfully, Paul Martin from my family's covenant group came to the ceremony and took me aside, comforted me, and tried to answer my questions. This is the first time I remember someone from this church family standing by me at a tough time. Paul reassured me, but I still found myself questioning my faith. 5 years later, my best friend John Durkee's mother died from breast cancer. Not only was Kate my best friend's mother, but she was also one of my mother's best friends. Seeing my mother hurt like that and thinking about John and his father Don essentially eliminated any trace of faith I had left. I'm an emotional person, so I expressed my feelings on Kate's death right away, but as I saw Durkee more and more, I found him not showing any emotion over her death. Not realizing that this was how he was coping with the pain, I became frustrated and angry with Durkee, and it took a toll on our friendship. That summer, I attended my first mission trip to the Dominican Republic, and John came along. I don't remember the exact circumstances, but at one point on the trip, one of the youth ministry interns, Alex Farr, pulled Durkee, my brother, and myself aside to talk about life in general. Over the course of the discussion, Kate came up, and Durkee revealed that he had been bottling up his emotions over the subject. Upon realizing this, I explained how I had felt since Kate's death and resolved the tensions I had been feeling towards him. Alex had recently lost her father, so she probably knew how John felt. Once again, someone from the church family had helped me through a bad time. The mission trip renewed and strengthened my faith, and it only grew until my junior year of high school. That year, the varsity basketball coach, Brian Murphy, had been diagnosed with colon cancer, but returned halfway through the season after surgery and several weeks of chemotherapy. Approximately a week after his return, I made the mistake of skipping a class with several of my friends. We were all suspended, and since I was suspended the day before a long weekend, I missed two games and two practices. Coach Murphy was understandably frustrated and kept me on the bench for the large part of the rest of the season. In September of my senior year, Coach Murphy died. I was upset because I had hoped to use my senior year to mend what I felt was a tarnished relationship. But since Mr. Murphy was gone, I felt like I had never resolved our differences. This hung over my head until halfway through my senior season. The basketball team was going through a tough stretch of the season, and since I felt like I was one of the leaders of the team, I blamed myself. One night, I broke down to my father, expressing my frustration and my feelings on Coach Murphy. My father talked me through it, but I needed reassurance from my brother, who had played for Coach Murphy a few years before. I called Sam in Texas, and we talked for a while about Coach Murphy and the other troubles I was having. Sam reassured me that Mr. Murphy had just been trying to motivate me, and there was no bad blood between the two of us at any point in my junior season. Sam's reassurance allowed me to move on. The basketball team regrouped and ended up winning the league championship, and I was named MVP of the tournament, and I felt I had lived up to what Coach Murphy would have wanted. My life outside the church has been dictated by faith established in the church, and I could not imagine confronting any of my troubles without my faith or having the church behind me. My covenant group, the youth program, and the various Sunday school teachers I've tormented over the years have molded me into the man I am. I wanted to specifically thank Eric Castle, whose willingness to come to basketball games at the ends of the earth to take pictures is amazing, and my family. My parents for putting up with all the stuff I get myself into. My siblings for their willingness to be bothered by me and their ability to bother back. My grandparents for setting examples of how to live your life and age gracefully. And finally, I wanted to thank my coaches, who taught me the meaning of teamwork and perseverance, and my school teachers, who taught me pretty much everything else. My faith has been bent and broken, but my friends and family from the National Presbyterian Church have always been there for me. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Christina Gore. No relation to Al Gore. But yes, I am the youth director, Mitch Gore's daughter, and I plan on attending Eastern University next year. As most of you know, I began attending National as an infant, and my parents raised me in a Christian home. I've grown up in middle school and high school with Christian values. Some of my non-Christian friends joked about how perfect I was, but little did they know how much I struggled inside. I constantly questioned what I believed, and even worse, I felt like a hypocrite, because yes, I was living the Christian way according to society, but I didn't even know if I really was a Christian. All my life, society was telling me it was all about following the values and not doing things other people were doing, like drugs, alcohol, you name it. I knew, however, that something was missing. I found it in ninth grade when I went on the Dominican Republic mission trip, and this year will be my fourth excursion. These trips have helped me see that a relationship with God was something that I wanted. There was something different, something inside our Dominican hosts that I wanted to have. The people there were so full of God's love and joy without many of the comforts we have here in the U.S. The sad thing, though, was that in a way, I didn't really know how to be a Christian or live it out. Then last year, on April 1st, reality hit me, literally. I had my learner's permit, and I was very excited because Adam was going to let me drive his car to hang out with some of the other people in our youth group. Adam Kiefer was one of our youth leaders and an intern from seminary. I was turning on Van Ness onto Reno, really close by here, actually. And I was just thinking about making the turn smoothly, proud that I had been doing well so far, when Adam yelled my name and I looked up just in time to see a construction truck driving straight at us. Next thing I knew, my face was stinging and swelling and the airbag dust was all over the car. And when I looked over, there was blood trickling down Adam's face. I felt so responsible and scared and shocked that this had happened to us as the men cut off the roof of the car and we were taken away in two separate ambulances. No, my life didn't flash before my eyes. And yes, in fact, God did protect us from any serious injury, but I felt drastically different inside. I began to imagine car crashes happening to me every time I was in a car, and I felt like death could actually hit me at any moment. Sometimes we think, I know some things that I do God wouldn't approve of, but I'll settle my spiritual life later on. When I go to college, when I become an adult, or even on my deathbed. This is when I realized how silly a perspective that is, because it limits the number of years we can have to spend with God, and He can have to use us, when we can't even be sure that we will have those years at all. I decided I wanted to change, then and there. I got started when Corey Tikus, my small group leader and Bible study leader, encouraged us to spend time with God daily and consistently. This helped me understand that Christianity is not a religious thing. It's a relationship with our awesome Creator. He's like a father. He cares for us. He wants us to know Him. And even gets jealous when we get so caught up in life, school, work, or friends, that they take over our lives. Most importantly, He simply wants to be with us. In the scripture read today, in verse 3, Jesus said, "If I go away and prepare a place for you, I will come back and receive you to myself, so that where I am, you may also be." You see, God, the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords, wants to spend quality time with each of us. We just have to give Him the chance. We can do that through allowing Christ to live in us. That means surrendering, letting Him become a part of everything we do, and recognizing that He is everywhere we go. That where I am, that you may be also.
Good morning. My name is Christine Rayburn, and I'm a current senior at the Holton Arms School in Bethesda, Maryland. Several weeks ago, my entire school gathered in the gym for an activity to demonstrate diversity within our student community. A teacher with a microphone instructed all 300 of us to make a huge circle around the room and listen to various categories by which we might identify ourselves. If we identified with a category, we were to walk into the middle and form a second circle. The first several questions had to do with sex, race, and religion, all of which I deemed no-brainers. Okay, I thought to myself as I walked out each time along with large portions of the student body. I'm female, Caucasian, Christian, so what? And then followed the next question. How many of you consider yourselves to be spiritual? My body seemed to surge, but I stood frozen in place. I heard my friend next to me snicker, and I looked around at the motionless circle. Why couldn't I move? Did I identify myself as a spiritual person? 7-year-old Christine would have shouted an immediate yes, a yes that was as ardent as her belief in Santa Claus or the Tooth Fairy or Tinkerbell, a yes that didn't have to lug the baggage of judgment or the fear of being accepted. Throughout my childhood, I thought my faith in God gave me an extraordinary advantage in life. I basically had this superpower to follow me around everywhere, listen to my problems, fix them, and maybe, if He wanted, move a mountain or two. I liked going to Sunday school and listening to Bible stories from the perch of my grandpa's lap. Being Christian seemed like a real adventure. Slowly, however, the mystique and wonder that encased my childhood faith became clouded with doubts, and I found myself wanting to put my identity as a Christian in a back pocket. My school, for one, put a constant emphasis on openness and acceptance of all races, ethnicities, and religions. Even as I believe my Christian faith to be the truth, I rejected the notion that people of other faiths could be condemned. At the same time, I seemed to hear more about the flaws of Christianity, the fundamentalism, the ignorance, and intolerance all associated with the church. I thought if I was even somewhat vocal about being a Christian, I would have to deal with all that society had heaped on the name of Christianity. As my exposure and knowledge of other cultures and ways of life grew, so did my intellectual curiosity. I wanted to delve deeper into history and philosophy and science, all of which seemed to be contradicting what I grew up to believe. This year I signed up for a course that took the Bible as a text of literature to be studied from a secular point of view. I thought dissecting the Bible would be a great way of reaffirming my faith, becoming more familiar with the text and stories I had loved as a kid. I realized, however, the more I read and studied, the more I began to regard the Bible as merely a text filled with incongruities and revisionist history. I soon found myself in a weird sort of limbo, wanting to maintain my faith, but at the same time looking for some other truths to validate my life. I felt a lot safer about Christianity and my faith at Sunday school and when I was surrounded by like-minded believers who could reassure me about God and my relationship with Christ. I looked forward to the mission trips to the Dominican Republic, where I could witness a community with an unbelievably wholehearted devotion to God. While the Dominicans materialistically had very little, they spiritually had enough faith and religious fervor to quell anyone's questions about Christianity. It was hard, however, to maintain the spiritual high when I would come back from these trips and not be continually surrounded by such faith. Nonetheless, I was really struck by one particular Sunday school lesson Mrs. Reed taught about C.S. Lewis. Here was a guy considered a great writer and intellectual, who at the same time was a strong Christian. I remember she read from his book Mere Christianity, in which Lewis explains the validity of questioning God and questioning your faith. In doing so, you're in fact strengthening your belief, because you're willing to explore your spirituality. That was it. I was questioning. But more importantly, I was exploring and developing my identity as a Christian. So as I withdrew myself from that outside circle, I realized I wasn't simply stepping out from a circle in my gym for the sake of some school exercise. This was me at the threshold of my life. As I go off to college next year, I will be walking out into the center of a world where I want to feel confident about my identity and spirituality. For I truly believe in the scripture and Psalm 119, thy word is a lamp unto my feet and a light unto my path. Thanks.
Hello, my name is Evan Kuster, and I have attended Washington Christian Academy in Silver Spring, Maryland for 14 years. I'm still in the process of making my college decision, either the University of Maryland, Johns Hopkins, or UMBC. I was raised in a Christian home, made a commitment to follow Christ at a young age, and grew up in the National Presbyterian Church. I've attended here my entire life. But even with all that, as I grew older, I often found myself seeking a deeper understanding of my faith. Richard Weaver said in his book, Ideas Have Consequences, that it does not matter what a man believes is heard on every side today. The statement really means that it does not matter what a man believes as long as he doesn't take his beliefs seriously. Ideas do have consequences. Belief lies at the root of all actions. If I believe the world is a certain way, I will act accordingly. Our culture makes light of the importance of belief. Such was in many ways my conception of belief. And yet that is not how Christ saw belief. John 8:32 says, Then you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. I was not free. However, in my sophomore year of high school, my school hired a young theology teacher, Nicholas Piotrowski, a man who helped change my life. Not afraid to challenge his students, he did just that, asking us what it is we believe, why we believe it, and how that belief should impact our lives. Those three questions haunted my thoughts for the last 3 years of high school. If Christ thought belief and truth were so important, then it would appear that I should too. Everyone believes something. If I did not know the right thing to believe, it was more than likely I believed the wrong thing. Such is the nature of presuppositions, things we believe before then believing anything else. We absorb them from our culture, from our teachers, friends, and families. I did more and more reading on my own, reading books by men such as John Piper, Oz Guinness, Dallas Willard, C.S. Lewis, G.K. Chesterton, Jonathan Edwards, Francis Schaeffer, J.I. Packer, and St. Augustine, just to name a few. I was surprised, shocked, and at times angered by what I read. Surprised when I learned something that would have never occurred to me. Shocked at the truly radical nature of so many things in the Christian religion. Angered when I encountered something that offended my sensibilities. My presuppositions were hardly in line with those of the Bible, and that was a problem. The wrong directions rarely lead to the right place. And that is just what Christianity is. It is the way, the right direction. Christ is the way because only by following him can we come to the Father. Only by following him can we fill what Blaise Pascal called the God-shaped vacuum in the heart of every man. This was my concern with the question of what we believe. Belief in the Bible is a moral imperative. One should not believe something merely because you feel like it. Instead, one should believe because to do other than believe is wrong. As Deuteronomy 32:47 says, "These are not idle words for you. They are your life." And as I realized just how important belief is, I was led to ask why it is I believe what I believe. What is the justification for my belief? Is Christianity, as we are told, nothing more than a blind leap of faith in the face of the facts, in the face of science and philosophy? How can we claim to believe something that does not correspond to reality? As I studied and read, I learned that that is precisely why Christianity is true, because it does, in fact, correspond to reality and offers the only rationally, morally, and existentially satisfying answer to who we are and why we are here. To quote C.S. Lewis, "I believe in Christianity as I believe that the sun has risen, not only because I see it, but because by it I see everything else." And yet to think about belief purely in terms of what and why is to divorce it from our lives. James 2:18-19 says, "Show me your faith without deeds, and I will show you my faith by what I do. Do you believe that there is one God? Good. Even the demons believe that and shudder." There's a difference between the belief that acknowledges and the belief that responds. As Dietrich Bonhoeffer pointed out, grace is not cheap but very costly. In his book, The Cost of Discipleship, he said, "When Christ calls a man, he bids him come and die." Before I started this 3-year journey, I did not understand what it was Christ asks of us. To respond to his call and make everything I am, everything I do, say and think, and everything I have subservient to and lived out in response to who he is and what he would have me do. To make this the driving force of my life. To take my joy and find my satisfaction in my relationship with him. To do these things was to find life and to die to the world. There was a conflict within me, a conflict between what Christ taught me and what the world offered. A conflict between my expectations and Christ's expectations. And as the last 3 years of high school unfolded, I became more and more disillusioned with promises of the American dream, with money and a comfortable life, disillusioned with the promises of cheap thrills. All around me, I saw people sad and broken because they had bought into the rules of the world and had become enslaved to its false promises. Do not let your hearts be troubled. That is what I saw, and that is what I found in Christ. In him, I found my identity, and by responding to his call to be his disciple, a sense of purpose and completeness that cannot be found anywhere else. We know the truth, and it calls for a passionate response. Is mediocre good enough for those who know the maker of the stars and the redeemer of man? No, for we are called to be exceptional. The call of Christ and his demands have convicted me, to take up my cross that my burden be light, to submit to authority that I might be free, to lose myself in order to save myself. These are not easy commands, and yet the call of Christ is always effectual. By the grace of God, I am learning to fear and love God more than all else, so that I might say with what Martin Luther once said, "Here I stand, I cannot do otherwise."